For me, running from the very beginning, I don't know, I just connected to it so quickly, like just within months of starting when I was 11 years old, that I just immediately knew it was going to be a lifetime thing. And it has to be something that is intrinsic, has intrinsic motivation behind it, and like comes from like the true core part of yourself and not just looking for external validation all the time. Like,
3, 2, 1, here we go!
Also, ich sag mal, kontrolliert gestorben. Ist egal, wie langsam oder schnell man läuft, der Lauf ist einfach brutal, brutal geil.
So, I almost lost my lunch on the streets of Champagne-Lac.
Cola rein bis zum Anschlag und einfach weitermachen.
Man denkt sich das zwischendurch, denkt man sich, wenn ich ankomme, dann falle ich einfach um und schlafe erstmal oder so.
Can you pound a coke?
No, I ate too much at the last aid station.
What?
When I took over the lead so early, I was like, I just thought it's not good.
Pretty much all my training was just steep up, steep down.
He's setting the crowd on fire, ladies and gentlemen, Kilian Jordan!
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge vom Trailfunk. Heute gibt es eine ganz besondere Folge für euch. Ich habe mich nämlich am Tag des UTMB-Starts in Chamonix mit einem meiner ganz großen Trailrunning-Helden getroffen, nämlich mit Anton Krupitschka. Ja, und was soll ich sagen? Damit ist ein kleiner Traum von mir in Erfüllung gegangen. Anton hat, ich denke, so viel kann man ohne Übertreibung sagen, eine ganze Generation von Trailrunnern geprägt. Die Bilder von ihm mit langen Haaren, oberkörperfrei, nur in Splitshorts und mit maximal einer kleinen Flasche Wasser in der Hand, ja, die haben sich tief in das kulturelle Gedächtnis der Trailrunning-Gemeinschaft eingebrannt. Es war auch gar nicht so einfach zu überlegen, welche Art Gespräch ich mit Toni führen möchte, da er im Laufe seiner Karriere ja hunderte Interviews gegeben hat und es bestimmt nur wenige Fragen gibt, die ihm noch nicht gestellt worden sind. Aber es ist mir doch gelungen, ein sehr interessantes Gespräch zu führen, ein Gespräch, das er in der Form wahrscheinlich auch noch nicht geführt hat und das mir persönlich auf jeden Fall in Erinnerung bleiben wird. Auch der außergewöhnliche Aufnahmeort hat dem Gespräch einen würdigen Rahmen gegeben. Wir haben uns nicht etwa in einem schicken Hotel getroffen, sondern saßen unter freiem Himmel auf einer harten Kellertreppe aus Beton am Rande der Tatanbahn in Chamonix. Ein Ort so bodenständig wie Toni Krupitschka selbst. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit der Folge.
I'm sitting here with Anton Krupitschka near the running track in Chamonix on a staircase. It doesn't look like much, and that's what I said before to Anton, but yeah, we didn't have lots of options because it's starting to rain and the weather doesn't look that nice. Anton, welcome to Trailfunk.
Ah, thank you. Appreciate you having me. Yeah.
It's an honor to have you as a guest. Describe the scenery a little bit in your own words, please.
We are sitting in a cement hole on the edge of the Chamonix track. But the mountains, they're looking pretty rainy. Low clouds, misty. I think maybe the runners tonight will be a little wet.
Yeah. So when we walked up to our spot, I asked you, when was the last time you ran on a track?
I mean, to actually do a workout on the track, it's probably been 15 years that I think about it now. But, you know, I'll run around a track every now and then. I used to do this run in Boulder, maybe 25, 30 kilometers, and there'd be a track that I'd run by in the middle. And sometimes I would run 1 mile on the track just for fun, like along the way, but never as like a workout.
Like a fast mile?
Yeah, faster. Not that fast. Maybe like, you know, a 5-10 mile or something in the middle of the run.
But, what's your mile PR?
Oh, geez. 4:42 from 2004.
Okay.
In college.
That's quick.
No, it's not. That's not even the marathon world record pace anymore.
for trail runners, it's a quick.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
So, how are you doing?
I'm well. It's been a hectic week in Chamonix, but I guess I always feel fortunate to be invited back to spend time here in the valley. It's such a spectacular place, and I also feel grateful this week. You know, I was here a year ago with La Sportiva, but I had an Achilles injury and I basically couldn't run at all. But this week, I've been able to get out and run every day and have had a couple nice runs in the mountains that have made the week feel worthwhile. Yeah.
Nice. I saw you, I think it was in your Instagram stories yesterday, you were climbing up some pretty steep mountain stuff.
Yes, there's a... Oh, you can't see. Well, yeah, you can. You can see it. It's up there.
Okay, it's one of those peaks.
Yeah, yeah, the smallest one, the Guy de Lem. It's just probably like the closest alpine rock climb to town. Just a classic moderate route, but you run up there. I change shoes and, you know, climb the route and rappel off the back and run back down to town. That's honestly my favorite kind of run to do anywhere. It's the kind of run I do all the time at home in Colorado. And so it's a treat to come to such a famous and spectacular place as Chamonix and be able to do something similar.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that you call that a run.
Well, there's a lot of... There's a lot,
running involved.
Yeah, exactly. The route itself is maybe only 5 or 6 pitches. Not super long.
Yeah.
And on the route was maybe only 20 minutes, you know, but I was out for 4 hours or something.
Nice.
So. it's mostly a run. Yeah, yeah.
So in preparation for this interview, I actually went scrambling myself with my friend Adrian, who's standing beside us, right over there. You see this little balcony right there?
Oh, I've been there before. It's kind of some slabs.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a bunch of bolts on them
and
stuff.
Yeah.
I've definitely been there before that, yeah.
I was kind of trying to mimic the style of running you do. And I have to say it was fun, but I got so much adrenaline in my blood because I'm not used to climbing that much. And I felt like I was going to die.
Well, that's not ideal. And that's the thing. That's just the style. I like combining activities like that. It keeps it exciting and interesting and... I don't know. Honestly, like with all the injuries I've dealt with too, it's a little lower impact.
Yeah.
So it's nice to mix it up.
Yeah. Okay. So you've been to a couple of podcasts this week already. And I heard that you said on the Single Track podcast this quote, UTMB week is the worst week to be in Chamonix. What did you mean by that?
Oh, no. Well, it's just so crowded.
Yeah.
What, there's probably... With the crew and the family and support and everything, there's probably 20,000 extra people, runners in town, you know?
Yeah.
Because maybe there's 10 or 12,000 runners actually, or people who are racing over the course of the week. And all those people have people supporting them. So there's just a huge number of people in town. It makes it hard to move around. It makes it hard to enjoy the town itself. But you get out on the trails and, you know, I hardly saw anybody yesterday, so.
Okay.
It's not so bad.
And do you get recognized a lot?
Not as much as I used to, which is nice.
Because of the hair?
But enough. Yeah, maybe that and because I don't race anymore, but you know, enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So I talked to quite a few athletes this week and also athletes that don't race but are here like for their sponsors and stuff. And it seems like that their schedule is even like more stressful than the ones from the athletes that are running.
Well, sure. Yeah.
Can you relate?
If say, you know, last year I was signed up for UTMB, but then got injured one month before the race. But like if I had actually raced UTMB last year, I would have requested with Sportiva that I don't do anything before the race, you know, just because you need to, I don't know, especially for someone like, I think a lot of athletes are this way. They're introverts. I'm definitely an introvert. And so it's fun because you want to catch up with friends and, you know, the brand expects you to, I don't know, be accessible for media and activations, that kind of thing. But that stuff takes a lot of energy too. And you can get to Friday, the end of the week, and just be completely exhausted before you even start the race, you know? If you're racing, I think it's important to conserve your energy before the race. Yeah.
So you said you are an introvert. Do you think that mountain sports is like the perfect sport for introverts because you get out and you're pretty much by yourself?
I don't know if it's the perfect sport, but and I think there are plenty of mountain athletes who are extroverts, but in general it seems like it maybe attracts a more introverted person.
Okay, so how are you going to follow the UTMB? Are you going to follow the race at all?
Oh, I mean, I'll follow it, but this has been a very compressed week for me. I will watch the start tonight, or maybe, you know, waiting for the start, but I will spectate the race in Les Ouches this evening.
Okay.
And then I will drive back to Geneva and get on the first flight tomorrow morning.
Okay.
So
first chance.
Yeah. So I will check the race again in the morning when I wake up to go to the airport. But then I'll be on an airplane and I don't know. I never get Wi-Fi on the airplane.
Okay.
It's nice to like disconnect for a few hours on the plane. Yeah.
So now I guess this question you have answered quite a few times this week already, but do you sometimes think like, what if, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, finish your question. I assume you mean like, what if...
What if, you know, running UTMB once again?
Oh, sure.
Like Anton Kropitschka UTMB 2027 or something?
Maybe 2027. I mean, you know, last year I was signed up for it and that doesn't happen by accident. You know, like I had to run a 100-mile race just to qualify for UTMB last year. And that was at the end of 24. And I did that on purpose because I wanted to qualify for UTMB. And I don't know. It definitely still interests me just because this is such an inspiring location. I mean, the Mont Blanc Massif it's crazy. Like there's not too many places like it in the world where you have that much vertical relief, you know, 4,000 meters. Mm-hmm. And you have such kind of like urban infrastructure, you know, like there's a city right at the foot of the mountain, you know, and multiple villages. And so it's a cool loop around the mountain. And I still enjoy competition. Like I think that competition is the most effective way to reach your potential, like your physical potential.
Mm-hmm.
It enriches the experience in that you are with a group of people who are all trying to do the same thing, you know, run around this mountain as fast as they can. And there's something very uplifting and like nourishing about that, you know, just the communal effort of it, I would say. And that experience still compels me just to get like the best effort out of myself. But from like a competitive standpoint, it's just, I mean, I'm in my 40s. Like it's just not as, I don't have the same competitive drive that I had 10 or 20 years ago. Like I don't feel the same need to prove myself, but I do still really enjoy taking on physical challenges and trying my best at something. And 100-mile races, I still find to be interesting events, especially, I guess, here at UTMB. It's the most famous running, you know, mountain racing event in the world, I would say. And both of my runs here were pretty disappointing for me.
Okay.
You know, the first one I didn't finish. The second one I finished, but it took me 26 hours to get around the mountain. And that's just...
When was that?
2013, 2014?
Yeah.
So they just weren't ideal. They weren't close to my potential, you know?
Okay.
There's always that nagging, like, oh, I'd like to at least feel like I had a good run.
Yeah, because I feel like finishing the UTMB and setting a time for yourself, it's like a marathon PB, you know? It's like the standard.
Sure.
For 100 miles. And people ask, you know, yeah, so what did you run at UTMB? So I can understand like the urge to at least do one good loop with which you're satisfied.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that still remains. But I mean, I would say certainly like the Hard Rock 100 is more interesting to me now in terms of like competitive events out there.
Yeah.
But that also requires a rigorous qualifying process that, it's a multi-year process to get into either of these races. Yeah.
I don't know. I heard that they do make exceptions for some athletes. And I think if you dropped in an email, you know,
maybe,
who knows?
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. So, today, I actually wanted to talk about building connections.
Hmm.
Just let me explain a little bit, because I feel like that's what most people here are in some way or another looking for, like whether it's an influencer, you know, looking for followers, or a trail runner chasing a dream. So I found this quote from you on the La Sportiva website, and it says, I run to keep me connected to my surroundings. Could you explain that a little more?
Yeah, for sure. I guess that has been the primary driver. You know, a competition like UTMB, it's one day. You know, it's one peak experience out of an entire year, an entire season, you know? For most of us as runners or mountain athletes of any kind, the daily practice, the accumulation of your days over a year, over a decade, that's what adds up to your life and what your experience is of a sport. And for me, that's what running has been, is this consistent daily thing for 30 years at this point of being, connected to my surroundings, to the environment, the natural world. I think a lot of people, obviously this isn't everyone, but just a lot of people in society, you're moving from like your house to your car to the office, mm-hmm. you know, one climate controlled box to another, mm-hmm. and then back again. And there's such little time carved out in your daily life to actually connect to the world around you, and what I will call the real world around you, which is the natural world. And running has just always been the way that I do that. It keeps me in touch with the seasons, the weather, my body, my emotions, like the way I'm feeling about running itself, but also life in general. And so it's for sure the main way I connect to the world.
Yeah. Okay. You said it's difficult to find or to make a connection because there's so much distraction mm-hmm. in modern society. So do you think that you have to kind of disconnect from some things to connect with the things you want to connect to, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends. I think there needs, anything you do where connection is the goal, there has to be some kind of focused intentionality behind it. And with all the distractions that we have, primarily digital distractions, yeah. let's say, you have to make the conscious choice to disconnect from those in order to free up kind of like the space in your life to connect to something more concrete, you know, something more natural, I guess. So yeah, I think some digital disconnection is probably necessary.
Okay, so how do you do that when you go for a run or for a climb or for a ride? Like, I guess you take your phone with you for security reasons.
No, I do. I take my phone with me for a couple of reasons. One, for photos. And two, I still, when I'm on, like, certainly when I'm riding a bike, and then maybe half the time when I'm running, I still am the same, you know, plugged into the whole electrical, like digital matrix, yeah. primarily listening to podcasts.
Okay.
And that's the thing, like, I'm not perfect. I have a low-key addiction to social media just as much as the next person. I am always consuming media of all kinds, primarily podcasts, some music. I really enjoy music. I don't know. I enjoy a lot of podcasts. But if I'm running on the trails, I don't generally listen to anything.
Yeah.
If I'm running like a road approach or a bike path or something like that, where it's a little more linear and tedious or like unvarying, yeah, I'll listen to something. But when I'm on the trails, yeah, it's too distracting. I would rather be a little more connected to my surroundings in the moment and open to the experience I'm having out there.
Do you have a music recommendation right now?
Yeah, I've been listening to this band, this American band Prewn, Prewn. I'm not sure where they're from, but that's just the first thing that popped in my head. The band that I've been listening to the most recently. Yeah.
Because it's a couple of years back, but you said in a podcast once that you were listening a lot to the band Idols.
Yeah,
I gave them a listen as well, and a few months later saw them live. So
thanks for that. Here in Europe?
Yeah, that was really
They're
nice.
Amazing live,
it's a good
right?
recommendation.
Yeah. Where did you see them?
In Munich.
Okay, nice. Yeah, I've seen them twice. Both shows were amazing. I hate to be that person that's like, oh, I saw them back. But they were the first show that I saw after the pandemic.
Yeah.
So it was in 2021. Is maybe the best show I've ever been to.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because there's just so much energy coming off the pandemic. It was like their first tour post-pandemic. And it was a venue that held like 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they even play places that small anymore. So no. It was amazing. Yeah. They're powerful live for sure.
Yeah. So, finding connections. So I guess it's about like, you know, getting into this focus and especially climbing, I guess, it's all about focus, right? I listened a lot to Alex Honnold, you know, talk about his state of mind while doing his climbs. And do you think it's comparable with running a technical downhill? Because that's like it happens and you have to be very focused in your head.
They're absolutely comparable with regard to, how focused you have to be, I think. Obviously, the consequence is not the same.
Most of the times.
But both require, if you're going to do them well, both require being completely present, like in your surroundings and in your body, you know? And that is an experience that I highly value. Whether it's running, climbing, skiing on the bike, that's kind of the ideal situation, I think, is where you're like completely focused on the activity at hand.
Yeah. It's like the complete opposite of multitasking. You're just one thing.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's what I was saying earlier. Like, it's like why I don't listen to anything on the trails usually, because it usually requires so much focus that it's just would be distracting to be listening to something.
Okay. So there's this German social scientist. He's called Hartmut Rosa. It's a very German name.
Sorry, what was his name again?
Hartmut Rosa.
Okay, yeah. Not heard of him. No.
He uses the word resonance. I don't know if that's like, if I pronounce it right.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
It describes a form of connection, I guess. And he says resonance is when you feel a deep, alive connection to the world, like being moved by a song or by a friend, and you respond to it emotionally instead of always trying to control or optimize everything around you. So how do you respond emotionally to being outside in nature?
Sometimes it's not anything significant, but other times this concept of which it sounds like he's talking about resonance is overwhelmingly powerful. For me, it's funny, like it will happen running. But I think part of it is running and climbing they require so much focus a lot of the time, at least on trails and that kind of thing, that it's like I can't, like emotion isn't really allowed to come in. But where I find this concept of resonance to really occur for me is on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a more mechanistic, like linear activity. You know, you're just in a straight line for the most part, especially, you know, riding, not mountain biking, but on the roads or on gravel, that kind of thing. And really you're a part of this machine. So you're just like you're the motor for the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very mechanistic. And that allows me to like turn my brain off a little bit and like, I don't know, just be a little more flexible with where my mind goes, I think. And man, I've been on some bikepacking trips where I've experienced some of the most powerful emotions like in my whole life, you know? And it's because I think after many days on the road, traveling solo, you really just like come to like you access some kind of vulnerability or just like openness to the world or like lack of judgment of yourself. You know, you don't have this like we most of us go through the world with like a kind of like we have a mask on, we sort of have our guard up, you know. And when you've been on the bike for a few days and you're exercising 10 or 12 hours a day, you know, moving, and you're alone, so there's nothing to take you out of kind of your own mind, I don't know. It's, I have found that I always end up getting like quite vulnerable at some point and feeling just this like, and honestly, like music like triggers it a lot of the time. I don't know. It's like you're overcome with emotion sometimes. And, it's kind of the only context I've experienced that in. And it takes a few days on a trip to kind of get to that headspace. But yeah, it ends up being this sort of, it's like a resonance with your surroundings, but also just like kind of like the world in general and the universe. I just get like overwhelmed, you know, but like in a good way, you know, like it's sort of poignant, but it's, I don't know, it feels very like honest and genuine, you know?
Is that a pleasant experience?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Just like highly emotional, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what they say about ultra endurance sports in general, right? That
I know that
after time it rips off your masks.
Yeah, exactly. But I have never really experienced that like in a race. I mean, there are people, it seems like they cross the finish line and they have that like release, that sort of like cathartic, mm-hmm. like I've never had that in a race or like you winning a race. It's always just like, I don't know, maybe it's because it's too public or something. And it feels like this performance because it is a performance. And so like, I've never felt the comfort to like, just be completely open and like, honest in those moments. But again, yeah, like when I'm specifically on like a long bike tour, like that's usually what happens. Just get like kind of like stripped naked and raw and not even in a negative way, not in like, but I mean, usually, you know, there's like some effort involved, or like some physical hardship involved. But it ends up, those end up being very meaningful moments, I think. Yeah.
Do those moments like become addictive in some way?
I don't know about addictive, but they're definitely, I look forward to them happening, but it's not the kind of thing that you can force. You can kind of like put the elements in place to make it a favorable environment, but it's, you know, emotions aren't they're involuntary. Okay. You can't force them, you know? Yeah. So it might happen. It might not, but yeah.
It's interesting because, I saw that you are a spreadsheet guy. Right? You document things and you plan ahead. So I just learned that there's a word called mathletics.
What is it?
Mathletics.
Oh, mathletics. Yeah.
So how do you keep these two sides in balance, like feeling and intuition on the one hand and rationality and control on the other?
Yeah, that's funny. That's a good question. I think they are just something that needs to exist in balance. For me personally, I've always identified with both approaches. I've studied both philosophy and physics. Mm-hmm. Those are they would seem contradictory, but they're kind of...
Both start with a P?
They both start with a P, a PH. But they are both they're both interrogating the same questions, but just with different techniques, mm-hmm. you know? And I've resonated with both in my life often at the same time, you know, and so I think that is reflected in my approach to athletics as well. Is I really like the philosophical, more abstract elements, but I also really like the more quantitative, maybe data-driven, I guess, elements of it too. And I don't know, it's just who I am. You can't really change who you are. It's like I get something from both, I guess. So, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I can recognize that they're a little bit in contradiction, but humans are complex and it's fine to like have both in balance, you know?
Okay. So right now there are a lot of people coming into the sport and also a lot of young people, I guess. And I do have the feeling that they are looking for some sort of guidance maybe because it could be kind of overwhelming, you know, where to start and do you have to focus on numbers or intuition, feeling, whatever. So yeah, what are some lessons you've learned during your life as a runner that you would like to share like with starters?
Okay. Well, first, and I guess this goes back to the previous question, I don't think it has to be an either or thing, you know, focusing on numbers versus intuition. I think you can have elements of both in your approach to sport, which would be one piece of advice I would give to a younger generation. And but I guess my overarching piece of advice, I don't know, it's especially when you're younger, you're really looking for validation of like, okay, I have value in this world. This is what's reinforced by society, you know, in general, like, or the industry in general and that kind of thing. And so it's easy to get distracted from what your true motivations are, because it's like, oh, if I want to be recognized, I need this race result or something. Mm-hmm. That's a way to like staying like in touch with yourself enough to know what it is that motivates you truly. Like what's your inherent purpose and motivation is with sport, and then follow that as closely as possible. Obviously there's going to be compromises along the way in, you know, any direction, but it's in order to like find quote unquote success in the sport, I think you have to stay in touch with what your true motivations are, you know?
Okay, yeah.
And that's just because it's not sustainable otherwise. It's going to be a short-term gig, you know, and you know, for some people maybe that's fine, but for me, running from the very beginning, I don't know, I just connected to it so quickly, like just within months of starting when I was 11 years old, that I just immediately knew it was going to be a lifetime thing. And if something's going to be a lifetime pursuit, it has to be obviously sustainable, and it has to be something that is intrinsic, has intrinsic motivation behind it, and like comes from like the true core part of yourself and not just looking for external validation all the time, I guess. So, yeah.
Is that what's being meant when people say, he or she is doing the sport for the right reasons?
Yeah. See, that's, I really like that you bring that up, because, but who's to say what the right reasons are?
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, like,
what are your right reasons?
It's what I was just saying. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The right reasons, like only the person, only the individual can know that, you know? And that's what I don't like about that phrase, like doing it for the right reasons, because it's this prescriptive kind of like that there is some sort of objective, larger, I don't know, reason that is correct. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like not each person figures out what the correct reason is for themselves, you know? And the only way, the only wrong reason is if you are too much diverting from that intrinsic motivation, I think. It is okay, I think, to be intrinsically, if you're intrinsically motivated for, say, competition or money, you know, like if that is why you're doing the sport, is for the money, like that's fine, you know, like it's like, you know, some people can happen to be really good at a thing and not have a lot of passion for it. And so maybe they just do it for a short period of time in order to capitalize, you know, to make a chunk of money off of it, and then they move on to something else. And like for that short period of time, like that's what it is for them, and that's fine, you know. I don't think, like I was saying earlier, I don't think there needs to be some expansive, everyone can have different reasons. Yeah, I have my reasons and someone else can have their reason, and it's fine. Yeah.
So when you do a sport like over a decade, and it's, I think it's, would you say it's like a relationship to another human being when, you know, there are some good phases and some not so good times, and you can lose the fun of it for some time. But do you think it's important to still, you know, still, with it and not kick it?
Yes. I agree with everything you were just saying, that like any relationship, your relationship to an activity is going to go through peaks and valleys and kind of like high periods and low periods. And certainly that's been the case for me over 3 decades. Like there's been, you know, maybe entire chunks of years where it has been 100% the focus and I've put all my time and energy into it, and then other periods where it's still there, but maybe it's more in the background and I'm prioritizing something else at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And but I do think that you know, if it's important to you, you should never, I don't know, deny it completely. Like, you should like keep it as a practice that is always there in the background, at least, because then, you know, it'll be easy to like reconnect with it when the time is right, you know, yeah. When like the motivation picks back up, or because if you abandon it completely, then it gets tough, you know, especially I think as you get older, like it gets tough to like, you know, regain the fitness necessary and that kind of thing. So, but it's going to ebb and flow, of course.
So I think we're about the same age. Okay. I will turn 42 this October.
Okay.
I think you're 40.
I'm like 1 year older. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And some people in, you know, my friends that are as old as I am, they question themselves and, you know, ah, do I still love this thing called running? And it's not fun anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And I found a quote you gave, Iron Farr, 2013, just before the UTMB.
Okay.
And, and you said, if you're not having fun, that doesn't mean that you're failing. You're just building character.
Ah.
So how much fun does it really have to be, you know, to be a
runner?
Well,
so this touches on another annoyance of mine, that a phrase you hear a lot is like, what's the point if you're not having fun? I hate that. It's like, well, really? Like, that's the point of life, is quote unquote fun? I think what people mean when they say that, I think they're using fun in an imprecise way. I think what they actually mean is, you know, if you no longer are gaining satisfaction or purpose or meaning from it, then what's the point? But that's not what fun is. You know, fun is this kind of like, I think it has like a more insubstantial connotation than I'm comfortable ascribing to my commitment to sport or running. Mm-hmm. That's why it rubs me the wrong way. But fun is not the reason to do things. Like, there are all kinds of things that are, I don't think most people would say that like discomfort is fun, mm-hmm. you know, but discomfort is a necessary part of having, like, you know, not everything can be sugar. Like, you got to have like the vegetables and the protein and those things aren't maybe as immediately tasty, but over the long term, they're going to sustain you and nourish you. And, I don't know, that's my approach to really anything. Like, there's going to be some uncomfortable times if it's worth doing at all, you know? So it gets pretty, you know, your palate gets pretty used to, it gets bored with sugar pretty quickly, you know?
So. But you have to eat your broccoli as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so here's another quote from that same interview. You said about the UTMB that, I can't imagine using poles on this course. It's a running course.
I said about UTMB. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Is that still something you would
what
say
year
today?
Did I say that?
2013.
Okay, yeah.
So when we see you next year running the UTMB,
will
you use the poles or not?
That's a really good question. You know, I actually think about this a lot. I use poles all the time in the winter for skiing uphill, ski touring. But I don't use them very much in the summer. I use them on long approaches where I'm carrying a pack to climb because of the extra weight. But, you know, weight is just an amplifier. Like, you know, your body weight, the pack you have to carry for a race like UTMB, like that adds extra weight. The distance, say you get 100 kilometers in, you're closer to your margin, you're closer to your limit. And so then poles are going to feel necessary. But, you know, maybe they don't feel necessary for the first 100K. But if you use them the first 100K, you are maybe putting off how long it takes to reach your limit. You know what I mean? I think the main thing with poles, I find when I'm trying to go like my absolute fastest up a hill, that they get in the way. And it's hard to go at my highest intensity, but obviously you're not doing that in a race like UTMB. You're always like way below your highest intensity. But there's a lot of running in UTMB too. I mean, it gets this reputation, or it seems like it has this reputation in North America at least, of being like a steep race, but what, there's 10,000 meters of climbing, which, you know, that's a lot of climbing, but it's not unreasonable. It doesn't, whenever you're out there, it doesn't, you know, I've toured around the mountain once, I've ran around it twice, you know, in one go. It doesn't strike me as like, oh, I'm always either going up or down. Like, there are rolling, runnable sections really the whole way around the mountain. But the thing with UTMB is you have to carry the poles from the start if you want to use them at all. I don't know. It's a good question. I'd probably have to commit to like a summer season of training with them in order to use them during the race.
Yeah.
I will say this. I remember in 2014, the next year, when I actually finished UTMB, I didn't use poles, but I mean, I was completely destroyed after Trinil. So what is that? 140 kilometers. Mm-hmm. In those last two climbs, I really wished I had poles. Going over what I can't remember. What is it? Col de la Balme over to Valarcine and then up to Flagey.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wishing for poles. I remember that. Yeah.
Okay. Here's another quote. My stomach has never been a huge issue in ultras.
Oh, God.
It's always been gels and chomps and sometimes Coke if things are going bad. I'm not going to be eating prosciutto and cheese.
Well, I don't think I would still be. It's funny. I feel like the sport has gone through a little bit of a back and forth. Like there was, because when that, I'm sure that quote was from also like the early to the 20-teens.
2013.
Okay, yeah. 2013. At that point in time, I mean, UTMB is still the longest time-wise, like race that I've done. I think there's a difference in your metabolism between, say, a 15-hour race and a 20-hour race. And, you know, the intensity is a little bit lower and you need something that's not just sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly for that, like, palate fatigue and kind of like the acidity in your stomach too. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be eating prosciutto and cheese, but I might have a little bit of fat of some kind, like maybe like pasta with a little bit of olive oil on it or something like that. Just something that's a little more bland. That's not just pure sugar, but is still carbs, obviously, or like salty potatoes, something like that. So yeah, I mean, the thing is like, gosh, this was 13 years ago. Like, You gain more experience, you evolve. Like it's fine to like contradict yourself, I think. Over the course of your life, your positions don't stay the same on everything all the time.
Yeah, and the taste of food changes as well.
Yeah, exactly. But I've also...
Gel's gotten better, right?
That's the thing. Like the technology's improved. You know, Goose from 10, 15 years ago... I don't know, now with like hydrogels and I don't know, like a more dialed in like glucose to fructose ratio, this kind of stuff. Like the science has improved on absorption rates and absorption ability and that kind of thing. Yeah, the technology's improved.
Okay. So like last question, I guess. You are in the Alps frequently, I would say, for your sponsor, La Sportiva, based in the Dolomites in Italy. And have you ever been to the German side of the Alps? Zugspitz.
Not to Zugspitz. No, the closest I've been is like Northern Italy, like around like the Sella group. That starts getting kind of close to Germany, you know?
Yeah, it's not that far.
Yeah. They start speaking German over there. You know, you go to like Sella Pass, Passo Pordoi, like people are speaking German up there instead of Italian. No, I haven't. And it's something that I would like to do just because it's fun to experience different cultures and new things. I spent one evening outside of Munich. Is it Kempten? Yeah. But it wasn't that. It was like a village near there. But never actually made it up into the mountains there. But I remember having a very like enjoyable dinner with a group of runners there. And I have fond memories of it. So,
okay.
Yeah, I need to get back to, I guess, what would be southern Germany.
Yeah.
And get into kind of the Bavarian region and, mountains there.
I have a suggestion. If you do need a UTMB qualifier, we have a German race now. It's Zugspitz Ultra Trail. And
what time of year is that?
It's in June.
Okay.
Yeah. It's part of the UTMB World Series now, so you can get a qualifier there.
And it's 100K or longer?
It's 100K or 100 miles. You can choose.
Oh, there's a 100 miler.
Yeah.
Do you like circumnavigate Zugspitze?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. It's from above, it looks kind of like UTMB. So you just surround the mountains with a very logical course.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah. So we'll be happy to have you.
There has been a Zugspitze race for quite a number of years though, right?
Like, it has some tradition and but just now got a UTMB World Series. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll definitely keep that in mind. No, that's cool. Yeah. Especially, I'm often in the northern part of Italy for La Spettiva because that's where they're located and it's not far from there, you know. Okay. So, yeah.
Okay. So, thanks for your time, Anton. That was fun.
Yeah. Likewise. Thank you.
Okay.